You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I am delighted that you are here. And I hope you make a habit out of it and come back each and every night. Just a reminder, Expeditions TV, that's Jerry Wills, is sponsoring a drawing to give away a beautiful native tapestry from Urco's Island in South America. On the first Monday night in March, we're going to have a drawing. We'll draw from all the names of people who are subscribed to our members area, okay? And one person is going to be the lucky person and win this amazingly beautiful tapestry. So now, if you're a member, be sure that you go to your profile in the members area, check, make sure you have your name there, because that's how we're going to do it. Now, if you've got some sort of secret squirrel name, like you put in Mickey Mouse or you put in Daffy Duck or something, I mean, that's not going to work and you won't be in the drawing. We're not trying to force anybody to put their name there. If they don't want to put their name there, if you want to be in the drawing, your name has to be there. All right? And be sure you check on that and get that done before that first Monday night in March. For all of you sci-fi fans, we've gotten busy and got a treat for you. If you're a sci-fi fan, you're going to like this. We got a lot of emails over the past few months with people talking about how much they like it whenever we play the old sci-fi movies on our web TV channel. And we do that once in a while. Well, if you are a sci-fi fan like I am, you will love this. We've got all of the Flash Gordon episodes. There are 12. There were only 12 produced. And we've got all of them on a single DVD for you, all right? And all you have to do is go over to my website. You'll see on the right-hand side, you will see a little picture of, it says a little graphic that says Flash Gordon. So just get over there and click on that, and it'll take you to where you can buy it. It's $8, that's all, $8. And it's one DVD. It's got all 12 of the Flash Gordon episodes on it. And, you know, one of the things I like about watching those old sci-fi movies, really, I mean, you watch them, and, you know, you remember that back at the time when these first came out, people were, like, awestruck, like all of us were when Star Wars first came out. And you sort of chuckle because you see how much our views have changed about space and space exploration and the possibility of extraterrestrial life. It's all changed a whole bunch. And so it's very entertaining. And as I said, it's only $8. And all 12 Flash Gordon episodes on that one DVD. Tomorrow is the day we send out the K-Files e-zine, our free weekly newsletter. So if you are not a subscriber to our free weekly newsletter, you're going to miss a whole bunch of information. Go over to my website, look for K-Files E-Zine, and subscribe, okay? We'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Now, you noticed if you looked at my website that the title of tonight's show, the little graphic you saw, said the universe did not go to your daddy's university, did not attend your daddy's university. Now, you've heard me say that before if you've been listening to the show for any length of time. And so that's not a big surprise for you. But I really want us to focus tonight. Focus our minds on how different things in reality are from the way we thought they were. And the reason I want us to do this is over a period of time, we have had a lot of guests that you have asked when we open the phone lines and you call in and you talk with the guest. A lot of questions have come about 2012 and about Planet X or Nibiru, and about there's a lot of concern expressed about what does the future hold. So I want us to really think about this tonight. There are all kinds of think tanks all around the world, right? I mean, you know, these professional think tanks. And I quoted from one the other night, the James A. Baker III Institute for International Policy or something like that, down at Rice University. And I quoted from one of their reports last night, night before last. Okay, well, that's one of those think tanks. And there's a bunch of them all over the country where people are being paid to think. Well, we're going to do tonight our own think tank. All right? Just because people have PhDs, and many of you do, some of you have maybe don't have a PhD, but you've got another different type of doctorate degree. Many of you have master's degrees. Many of you have bachelor's degrees. Many of you have no degrees. Now, I want to set the stage before we start our think tank here tonight. You may or may not agree with what I'm about to say, but this is my position, and I've stated it many times, and that is I don't think a degree means you can think. I have degrees, and I'm not belittling the value of getting a degree, if that's what you want to do. But that doesn't, just because you get that piece of paper and it's hanging on your office wall that says you've been approved as, you know, you've got a Bachelor of Science or a Master of Arts or a Doctor of Philosophy or whatever it is, that doesn't mean that you're smart. Now, a lot of people that have those degrees are smart. But that it's not an automatic, some of the really dumbest people I've ever met in my life were other people who had doctorate degrees. And some of the smartest people I've met were people who had no degrees, and it's everything in between. So the degrees don't mean anything about your ability to think. They mean zilch, absolutely nothing about your ability to think. What they say is that you had the means and the ability to go satisfy some professors, pass their tests, write their papers, and get their approval. That's what it means. But we can think. All of us can think. And so I want us to sort of do our own little bit of think tanking here tonight. And this will be the Kevin Smith Show International Think Tank. And I want to begin by pointing out some things about us as the human race. And let's get these out of the way, and it sets the foundation for where I want us to go in thinking about some pretty heavy subjects that we may be facing with 2012 coming up. We humans have two or three really bad habits that we need to be aware of and that we need to be on guard against. And the first one is assuming that the rest of the world is pretty much like where we are. Well, it just really isn't, okay? And, I mean, you can't even take one country or continent and say it's this way. For instance, sometimes people say, oh, well, the Americans are this or that. No, that's just nonsense. There's 50 states here, and they are very different from each other. The culture that you find, for instance, in Arizona is way different than you will find in Boston, Massachusetts. The culture that you find in New York City is way different. And the way of life, way different than you will find, say, in Hawaii. So, you know, the world is not like where you are. Just get that through your head. This planet you're on, the rest of it is not like where you are. Secondly, one of our bad habits is assuming that most other people think like we do. We like to think of ourselves as sort of being among the majority. It makes us feel good. Well, it's not true. Most other people don't think like you think. You think like you think. And that's why it's so important for each one of us to think and to really work through things. And then, you know, through discussions, you sort of come to a consensus. But a consensus doesn't mean that most people think like you think. Then the third thing, and these are just some bad habits we have, and we need to be on guard against them. We humans have a bad habit of assuming that what we think we know is accurate, simply because that is the majority consensus. So let's back up to that second one. We like to think that the majority thinks pretty much like us, and that isn't the case. But we do come to some consensus in order to live together. Then we make the mistake of believing that what we think we know is accurate because that's the consensus of the majority. And that's not the case either. A consensus is just sort of we agree to some ground rules so we can get along and so we can kind of operate. And that's all it is. It doesn't mean that it's really accurate. There are groups of people who have a consensus that the earth is hollow. And there are groups who have a consensus that it's not hollow. They don't buy that hollow earth theory. Who's right? Well, who knows? Nobody knows. Both of those are beliefs. And so, you know, it would be wrong, it would be inaccurate, it would be irrational to think that what we think we know is accurate simply because there is a consensus. There was a consensus at one time, you know, where they believed that the earth was flat. There was a consensus where they believed if you sailed far enough out in the ocean, you would fall off the edge of the earth. That was the consensus. It was wrong. There was a consensus at one time that said that, and I mean, this was really, really the consensus, that said the earth was the center of the universe and everything else moved around it. That's wrong. But it was the consensus. But you see, we kind of get that comfortable feeling from having the cloak of the majority around us. Well, the fact is that almost without fail when it comes to an understanding of the cosmos, the majority's wrong. Always has been. Almost without fail, given enough time, we discover that the majority, the consensus, is wrong. That's our history. We can look down through history and see example after example after example of that. There was a consensus at one time that the way the sun keeps burning is that it was a massive wood fire. That was the consensus, but it was wrong. And now that we have sort of set the stage, you see, these three bad habits are what we define, or they are what define the human race as being homoterocentric. In other words, in the back of our minds, we sort of have the notion that the universe is like we think it is simply because we, the human race, think it is that way. Well, tonight, what we're going to do is explore some of the limits of that. We're going to explore the limits of our homoterocentric thinking as it applies to life here and on other planets, other heavenly bodies. Does our man-centered cosmic view really comport with reality? Or have we gotten some serious chunks of information completely wrong? Well, I think there's a lot of evidence we've gotten some serious chunks of it completely wrong. Is life, our world, our galaxy, our universe, anything at all like what we've been told and like what we have believed? Now, before we go any further, I'll say some things here tonight, and some of you, when you call in, will say some things that other people are going to respond to. They're going to have a reaction to it, and they're going to say, well, that goes against everything I ever heard. So? That goes against everything I ever believed. So? Believing that the earth is round goes against everything that people in the days of Copernicus ever believed or ever heard. Believing that all of the planets, stars, galaxies are in motion, and that the earth itself is in motion, and that we and the other planets are in motion around the sun goes against everything that was in the majority consensus in the days of Galileo. So to say that, well, you know, this goes against everything I ever heard, the next question that comes up and that you have to answer is, so what? Now, I'm not being insensitive here. I'm being quite serious, and that's a rational question. So what? Maybe we haven't heard everything we need to hear. Maybe we haven't been taught everything we should have been taught. And maybe, in some cases, that's because the scientists and the teachers didn't know. Or maybe, in some cases, it's because they knew and didn't want to tell you. So let's just start with a couple of examples. And we're going to move a couple of examples here on Earth, and then we're going to move out into the cosmos with this, and I'll open up the phone lines. Now, the first example has to do with some fossilized footprints. Now, the fossilized footprints are estimated to be 570 million years old. 570 million years old. Now, they're a little bit hard to see in the picture that I've put up, but it's those little holes that are punched into the stone there. Those are toe prints, footprints of some type of, according to the biologists, paleontologists, some type of aquatic creature. Now, why is that important? Well, the reason that's important is because, you see, 570 million years ago was at a time when, according to the accepted knowledge, the accepted theories, there were no animals up on legs. scientists have, up until these fossils were found, scientists have thought and taught that at that period of time, it was primarily microbes and simple multicellular animals that existed. And there were no animals that had legs that they could stand up on. Well, now they have found them. They have found the fossilized footprints of them. Now, this was reported back in October of 2008. So this is not hot off the press, but it's still very recent news. And Professor Lauren Babcock, professor of earth sciences at Ohio State University, had some amazing things to say about this discovery. He said, and I quote, "We keep talking about the possibility of more complex animals in the Ediacaran, that's a period before the Cambrian period of time. We keep talking about soft corals, some arthropods, flatworms, but the evidence has not been totally convincing." But now listen to this. Listen to what he says. "But if you find evidence, like we did, of an animal with legs, an animal walking around, that makes the possibility much more likely." These poor professors, these poor, highly educated professors cannot bring themselves to just say it. It doesn't make the possibility more likely, the possibility that there were animals in that period of time that had legs that were up walking around. They found the evidence. It doesn't make it the possibility much more likely. It makes it absolutely certain. But there you have an example of something that was the established, it was the gospel truth for evolutionary scientists. There were no animals that were that complex during that period of time. They just didn't exist until they found the evidence that they did exist. All right. By the way, that takes it back 30 million years earlier. 30 million years earlier than they had believed there were animals with legs that walked on their legs. Now, we just took evolutionary theory and blew a 30 million year hole in it. That's not all. You know what a single cell animal is, right? How big did they get? You're going to be astounded when we come back from this break and I show you a single cell animal bigger than any you ever saw. It's a giant. We'll be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about things we think we know, but we really don't know. And I'll show you in a minute why that is important to those of us who are interested in anything that is out of the ordinary, anything that gets termed as paranormal. If you're interested in UFOs or you're interested in extraterrestrial space exploration, the possibility of life on other planets, why is this important? Even if you're interested in things like alternative energy that is right now considered exotic, the possibility of propulsion systems that can take us to the stars, speed of light or faster than light travel, you're interested in teleportation, all of those exotic technologies, let me show you why it's so important for us to think aright. All right. I've shown you those footprints. Now, those footprints were not found by someone that academia can point to and say, oh, that's a crackpot. No, this is a respected professor at Ohio State University. And this is, this is the scientific community. Now, they can't quite bring themselves to just say it and say, okay, this blows our evolutionary theory, blows a 30-million-year hole in it. So everything that we've constructed has all been jumbled now. Okay? All he could say was, well, it makes the possibility much more likely that something on legs existed. Well, something on legs with feet made those footprints and they fossilized. That's not a possibility. That is a certainty. All right, but watch this. You went to high school, or even if you didn't go to high school, at some point in your life, you probably attended science classes and you peered through a microscope. And you probably looked at an amoeba or maybe a paramecium. And this is a little one-celled animal. And you can't see it with your naked eye. You have to have a microscope to see it. If you just look at that little drop of water that's on the slide, all you see is a drop of water. But when you peer through the microscope, there's a world of living creatures in that little drop of water. One-celled animals. Little tiny things, right? Well, that's what the scientists taught us, and that's what they thought. That is exactly what they thought about one-celled animals until they took this picture. Now, what you're looking at in this picture, you're looking at a dead sea urchin that is on the bottom of the ocean. And this dead sea urchin has, there's some coral that has begun attaching itself to this sea urchin. Well, what they were amazed to find was a little creature about the size of a grape. They weren't sure what it is or what it was. Now, this was November of 2008, and they weren't really sure what that was, but whatever it is, it's crawling along the bottom of the ocean, and it's leaving tracks behind it. And it appears that it is headed towards the sea urchin. Well, when they were able to pick up samples of that creature and examine it, you know what they found? They found that that is a one-celled animal. They call it a protist. P-R-O-T-I-S-T, a protist. It's a single-celled animal, the size of a grape, able to move across the ocean floor and with enough weight to leave tracks behind it. So everything that we were taught about single-celled animals, that you have to have a microscope and peer into little drops of liquid to see these single-celled animals, turns out to not be true. That's just not true. A single-celled animal, that big around, a single cell. Now, that's a big, big cell. But there it is. And so, on the one hand, we've seen evidence here that blows a 30-million-year hole in the evolutionary theories. We've seen another that blows a gigantic hole in what we thought we knew about zoology and biology. And that's right here on good old terra firma. And with these two examples, we ought to be able to see that it is highly presumptuous of anybody, I don't care how many doctor's degrees they've got and how many books they've published, it is highly presumptive for them to say, well, that planet over there cannot have life on it because, well, it doesn't have any oxygen. I mean, think about that. Consider how weird it is that there's life here on this planet where there is oxygen, because oxygen is one of the most corrosive elements in the periodic table, and it is one of the most explosive. And yet, we require it for life. Highly corrosive. It'll bring down huge bridges and huge skyscrapers. It does something called oxidation. That's called, we call it rust. And it will bring down gigantic structures. It is highly corrosive and excessively explosive, but we breathe it. I can imagine if there was intelligent life sitting on some other planet looking at Earth, they might say, there can't be any life over there, guys. That thing's full of oxygen. But we think you have to have it. And yet, even here on this planet, we have discovered life forms that if you expose them to oxygen, they'll die. They live in a soup of hydrocarbons and CO2. And if you put them in water, which is mostly oxygen, right? I mean, or it's got a heavy concentration of oxygen. You have two helium. It's H2O, two hydrogen atoms, and then one oxygen. But the oxygen compared to the hydrogen is a big, fat atom. You put those life forms called archaea in water, they'll die. Put them in air, in oxygen, and they'll die. But there they are, right here on this planet. Now the question comes, why would we suspect that oxygen would be necessary for life on other planets? I mean, let's say you buy the idea of evolution. Okay, life happened. It had to happen within the context of what's on this planet, right? It had to happen within the context of the environment and the climate and all that stuff. Well, you go to another planet, and if that evolutionary theory is true at all, you go to another planet, and it's got methane, or it's covered in hydrogen instead of or maybe CO2. Well, if life can happen here where it's oxygen, and oxygen is one of the most corrosive and explosive elements that exists, why couldn't it happen on a planet within the context of that planet, life arising that requires methane instead of oxygen? Now, see, that's where a lot of people will say, you know what, that's nuts. That goes against everything we know. Yeah, well, you don't know anything. That's the point. We don't know anything. You compare what we actually know to what there is to know, and it's minuscule. It's microscopic. And even most of what we think we know is getting big holes blown in it, like these two stories that I've just presented to you. Most of what we think we know, we don't know. And we need to start calling it what it is. It's a belief. What we think we know is really just belief. What we think we know is a description of what we've observed so far. But we haven't observed everything, not even everything on this planet. So what does this have to do with space exploration? What does it have to do with the possibility of life on other planets? Not even other planets. What about satellites of other planets, like our moon or Titan, one of the satellites around Saturn? Well, I think that if we're going to really do serious investigation, serious scientific investigation, we've got to start thinking in terms of life that's not like us. We've got to start thinking in terms of life that would arise in a different atmosphere. Now, we've got lots of programs out there, scientific programs, looking for another Earth. There may be one, maybe not. But that doesn't mean there's not life. If life can exist on this planet in a soup of hydrocarbons and CO2, and will die when you expose it to oxygen, and that's right here on this planet, if we have that, why would you suspect it couldn't exist on some other planet? Something that lives in a soup of liquid methane. Something that lives in a soup of liquid carbon dioxide. Or maybe not even liquid. Oh, well, you know, it's just way too cold on those planets. Yeah, for you. But if you had evolved on one of those planets, that would be normal temperature for you, wouldn't it? Do you get my point? Now, here's what I'd like for us to do. I'm going to open the telephone line, and I'll put the telephone number on our screen, and I'll announce it so everybody listening by radio will have the telephone number. But here's what I'd like for us to do. I want us to do some serious thinking about where do you think... You see, NASA's kind of under the gun right now. And, you know, I read you that report from the think tank that says, you know, they need to just ground themselves and quit flying into space for a while and just concentrate on alternative energy sources for Earth. But that's not what NASA does. NASA was not designed for that. NASA was designed to fly in space. And as they develop the systems they need to go explore all these other planets, they develop the science that comes to us then, and we use their science every day and in our lives. And so let's think about where should NASA look for life, seriously, earnestly look for life, and let's think about how could they look for life that exists in those environments that are not like Earth. Let's try tonight to not be homo terracentric. Homo terracentric. Homo is man, terracentric, Earth-centered. Let's think off Earth tonight, and we'll do that when we come back after this break. Right, we are back and ready to go here with some Kevin Smith Show international think tanking. Okay, where should NASA be exploring for life? Where in our solar system? Because we know we can get to the planets in our solar system, so where in our solar system should they be exploring for life? What sort of life would you think would be there? How do you think they could look for it? Because, you know, if you go to Mars and you look for life, well, I don't know about Mars. Let's say Mercury. You go to Mercury and you're looking for life that looks like us. You're not going, you won't find it because there's not enough oxygen. It's way too hot. You know, it's a mess for us. So if you're looking for life that looks like us chemically it's not going to be there because they don't have the chemical, or it doesn't have the chemicals there on mercury that are necessary in the right concentrations for life like us. Okay, so how would you suggest that they look for it? And what do you think we need to be doing with NASA? That's another big thing, because that's under discussion. Think tanks are issuing reports saying, hey, you know what? NASA needs to get out of space and start working on technologies here on Earth. Well, maybe you agree with that. If you do, we would like to hear from you. The telephone number that we're using for our call-ins tonight is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And I really am serious about this. I think our audience has exhibited over the years the capacity, the ability to really think logically, rationally, and deeply about a lot of things. Maybe you think NASA should stop flying in space for a while, forget about going back to the moon, forget about going to Mars, and concentrate on developing alternative energies here on Earth. Or maybe you think they shouldn't. Maybe you think they ought to go ahead and do the space exploration, because in doing so, they are going to develop technologies that will be useful to us here on Earth. But how should they look for life? The universe didn't go to the same university you went to. It didn't go to the universities that any of the PhDs went to. It does what it does. So how should we be looking for life? Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Well, you know, if... Pardon?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm getting feedback, that's all. You know, first of all, if these think tanks want to know about some free energy sources, they should talk with Jacques Fresco and Roxanne Metals of the Venus Project. They might be able to give them some ideas, because that's what they work on. But as for... Pardon?
We're waiting.
Oh, I keep getting hearing feedback, and I think it's you that's saying it. I don't know what's why. It could be your new systems. But and we also talk about where to find life. Well, I think the nearest place that NASA could find life in this solar system would be in their own computer systems, because we already know that they have found life in the solar system. They're just not saying it.
How do we know that?
Well, because,
or do we just believe that?
We've seen the photographs that there at least was past life on Mars at one time. We've seen the structures. It's not a matter of belief. We've seen the photos. We've seen the artificial structures. We've seen the skull. So we pretty much know that there has been, at least there has been life on other planets in the solar system. Whether there still is now is a question that still needs to be answered.
All right, where do you think we could find life existing right now?
Where do I think?
Mm-hmm.
You want me to tell you why, right?
Well, where? Where do you think we would find Mars. Life right now?
Right now, Mars.
Okay, so you think that on Mars, right now, as you and I are talking, There is something alive there.
Yes, because they've detected the, I guess you could call it, what we would understand the markers of life. They found the methane, they found the ammonia, and we know what causes ammonia, that it only lasts 6 hours in the atmosphere. They've also found methane. Unfortunately, we know where that comes from also. It's biological, that's all we're going to say about that. So I would have to say Mars, absolutely.
All right, now,
without a doubt,
what do you think that life is like? Do you think it's microbial? Do you think it's more complex, like some little animals? Or do you think it's even more complex and is intelligent, possibly humanoid?
Well, judging by the fact that there are artificial structures on Mars, I'm more inclined to think that there is likely some sentient, intelligent life on Mars, perhaps humanoid, and even so far as going to say that there may even likely be a secret military base on Mars, because we know they've had a secret space program. They may, behind our backs, mind you, have gotten to Mars.
Okay. All right. Do you think that the I know I'm asking you to speculate, and that's what it is. It's speculation, but that's okay. Do you think that whatever intelligent beings created those artificial structures that you refer to, do you think that any of them are still living there?
Do I think any of them are still living there?
Mm-hmm.
From the research I've done? Yeah.
Where do you think they're living?
I think they're living underground. I think the above ground is too inhospitable, and I think they've gone underground.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you to speculate on one more thing. Do you think that at any time soon we're going to find out for sure whether what you've said is how it is?
Anytime soon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. That is a good question. Because every time that we've all said that disclosure is just around the corner, and it never comes.
Yeah, well, they forgot to tell you that the next corner is 200 miles away. It is just around the next corner. But the next corner is in the next county somewhere. It's, you know, it's not down the street here.
Well, okay, I'll put it this way. If we're not one of the global elite, we'll never know.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
All right, have a good night, man.
All right. All right, telephone line is open. We're doing a little bit of Kevin Smith Show International Audience Think Tank here tonight. If and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the United States and you're outside of Canada, that number works. But if you don't want to pay for international long distance, you can send me a flash message. Go to my website and just send me a flash message. You'll just scroll down. You'll see it in green. It says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Trey in Louisiana.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, Kevin. I think I'd probably look for any planet that might have any sign of frozen liquid or not frozen liquid, because if you've got liquid or frozen liquid, that means there was enough heat there to stop whatever liquid it is from freezing. And if it's frozen liquid, it came down probably from precipitation from the past. So.
Okay, well, let's take Titan, for instance. Titan is one of the moons of Saturn, and according to scientists, according to NASA, is absolutely covered in methane. And it has oceans and lakes of, they think, liquid methane. Now, they're not saying for sure, but that's what they think it is. So what you're saying is that would be a good place to look.
Yes, liquid.
Okay, now, if we're going to look into liquid methane, how would we look?
Kevin, that was one of the things I was going to bring up, is if we're going to go exploring into space and we're going to really look for life, we're going to have to test all kind of different underwater craft in all kind of underwater conditions. I mean, we're going to have to go, okay, what different liquids do we have? We're going to fill up a pool of it and figure out.
Figure out how to look under it.
Can operate.
All right, we're into a break. Do you want to hang on during the break?
That's something we can't guess.
Okay, we're into a break. Hang on, I'll be back with you. All right, folks, in a moment, more. All right. right. We are back, and on the phone with me, I hope he's still there, is Trey from Louisiana. Trey, are you still with me?
I'm here.
Okay. So you were talking about how we would go about looking into these liquid, like an ocean of liquid methane.
Yeah, I mean, you have to practice and make sure it wouldn't corrode, make sure your equipment would work, and all that, Kevin. I mean, let me ask you something. I don't know. You might know the answer to this. I wonder what's more corrosive, liquid methane, water, liquid nitrogen. I mean, I wonder which one is actually more corrosive. You just put, you know, one object down there, the same object. I wonder which one would corrode it faster.
You know, I don't know that. Maybe some of our audience know. I don't know.
Huh.
I would suspect it's water because it has oxygen. And oxygen is highly corrosive. So I don't know. I'm just suspecting.
I just wonder, you know, if the answer is oxygen is, or water is more corrosive, then I promise you most people wouldn't say that. They would say methane.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of think whatever's got oxygen in it is going to be more corrosive, I think.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong, and so some of our scientists that are listening maybe can give us a call and tell us about that.
That was a funny quote, or what you read earlier about that scientist saying that it increases the possibilities. It's like having a dead Bigfoot that you know is a Bigfoot in front of you, and you look at it, well, having this dead Bigfoot in front of me really increases the possibilities that, you know, a Bigfoot might exist.
Yeah, if you have the evidence, it's a done deal.
Yeah, it's evidence.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Okay, Kevin.
All right. All right, folks, the telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889, and we'll be glad to take your call. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan up in Washington.
Hi, Ryan. Good.
Well, I think we need to. I think we need to start putting our scientists to work again to develop a new. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we're waiting.
Can you hear me?
Okay. All right. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. This is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing, sir?
Outstanding.
I know you want to do the off of the Homo terracentric thinking here, but I hope you understand kind of where I want to go with this.
Yeah, go ahead with it.
If NASA, we had NASA's budget put into deep sea exploration and really discovering what's still on our own planet, that I think that maybe sometimes we kind of get big and think that we've got it all figured out here yet still.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know that there are crustaceans that hang out near methane stacks at the bottom of the ocean at crushing depths where nothing should be living. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of things still on our own planet that if we could learn to discover more of what's here, it might help us better understand farther out in space, you know, and how different things react in those kind of environments and where we might find life.
Well, yeah, I don't think that we should take NASA's budget, though. NASA's budget is a microscopic drop in the ocean. They only get $16 billion per year. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. $16 billion for NASA. And the bankers just got $700
billion. Wow, yeah, that's when you say it like that, it really puts it in perspective.
and they're about to get $800 or $900 billion more. And, you know, I think whenever we stop and think about, you know, we're rescuing bankers, we're rescuing Wall Street to the tune of trillions, $700 billion plus $900 billion, you're close to $2 trillion here. And $1.6 trillion is what that comes out to. All right. So that means that we have just bailed out the very people that put us in the mess to the tune of 1,000 times more than NASA's budget. So I think, you know, and I've taken a lot of criticism for this, actually. If you could read all the email that comes in here, I get a lot of email that's very critical, and that's fine. I mean, you know, I believe in freedom of speech. But I get criticized pretty soundly every time I say we ought to at least double NASA's budget and tell them, okay, boys, go get it.
Yeah.
Stop fooling around. Get this done. Let's get out there and find out what's going on. And we ought to double their budget.
Yeah, and I've never been one to think that NASA was really useless. I know, I mean, I've read Dark Mission, and I've listened to Mr. Hoagland speak, and I think that if NASA truly has the ace in the hole card, and they do know that there's something else out there, or if they're, you know, certain non-military aspects of it. I mean, I know they are a militaristic branch, but if there were people on the inside that could come out and say to the public, hey, here's a little sample of what we've got, you know, help us double our budget. I think it would open the public's eyes, and they would be more prone to want to give and to make sure that those kind of programs stay active. But it just seems like there's been such a lull of really prominent information that the public would find useful. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, a whole lot of what NASA's been doing with the space station is all about getting ready to do manned missions to the moon, to Mars, and so forth. And it's not exciting. You see, in order to do a study about long-term effects of weightlessness on our health, you have to spend a long time doing it. And that's what they've been doing. And trying to get all kinds of information about what happens to us if we're in weightlessness for a long time. And then also trying to develop things that will overcome that. Space health has to precede space exploration, or you kill your astronauts.
Yeah.
And so it's not exciting for us. It's not like, hey, we just landed on Mars, and guess what? The face is real. That would be really exciting. You know, that would be glamorous. That would be sexy. But what they've been doing is excessively necessary in order to be able to go do that mission to Mars, you see. And it just takes a long time to get the information they needed. And, you know, the space station, a lot of people don't know this, the space station is not slated to stay in operation beyond, I think it's 2015. And there are other nations participating with us in the International Space Station that want to carry it out to 2020. And I think a lot of people think it's just going to be there forever. It's not. Its demise is within our lifetime. And it
makes you wonder what's the replacement, or what is the, you know, what is the next step that we're going to be taking then? Have we learned enough then from the time and space that we've spent on the station and with the astronauts to move to the next step? Or do we just shut the whole thing down?
I'd like to know how they're going to deorbit the thing.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting sky show, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's massive. It is massive. We, you know, that's going to be an interesting project. But the next step is not the International Space Station. The next step is back to the moon, and from there on to Mars. And the plans, as I understand them, include making a permanent human presence on the moon. In other words, a base or a colony. Well, look, all of the technologies that it would take for us to actually do that will help us tremendously here on this planet. The life support technologies that they will have to develop to have that colony are technologies that will solve a lot of the energy problems here on this planet.
Yeah, that is so true. Well, hey, so, Kevin, I'll let you go here and let somebody else in, but just kind of in closing, you know, if there's one thing that we do that forces us to investigate and to search farther, it's pressure. So I think maybe Mother Nature might force us to move a little quicker on the whole is there life somewhere else.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
We are indeed, sir.
All right, thanks for the call.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. All right, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Let me tell you, we do have some new equipment. We haven't gotten it all settled in yet, just exactly like it should be. And some people, when they call in, hear an echo in their phone. If you hear that, just keep talking, all right? I apologize for it. We're not hearing the echo on this end. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan again. Sorry about that. I got kicked off. I don't know what happened there.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think that what NASA needs to do, I think that it's time for us to develop a new. Well, I am hearing an echo. Gosh.
Yeah. Well, just don't listen to it and keep talking to us.
I just think that it's time for us to move into to develop a new. Once the shuttle retires. The idea of using old rocket technology to get into to space is it just seems silly to me. I think that if they can sit down and put our best scientists together and our best minds together to come up with other ideas of how to get into orbit and how to move around in space, because I think we've been relying on the shuttle and the space station for so long that I don't think they've had. I don't know. I think there's probably a better space vehicle. I mean, the shuttle's been a great vehicle, but as far as looking for life on other planets, I have a hunch suspicion that a lot of the life forms that are out there. I bet a lot of them are animal life forms. I agree with what you said that we need to stop looking for life like us because a lot of it will probably be animal life forms that we find. But
well, I think so.
I gotta go. I got a real bad echo.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think that we will find life forms that are animal, but, you know, animal life forms can be single cell, microbial life, all the way up to highly intelligent, complex, organized life like us. And I'm not sure that we are highly intelligent, but as compared to a paramecium, I think we are. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. I think we should be looking for life forms in whatever form they take. And when I say that we should not be looking for life forms specifically that are like us, I don't mean human type or humanoid. We ought to be looking for life forms that are based on other chemical soups other than the chemical soup upon which we are based. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi. Good evening, Kevin. This is Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I'm kind of like the caller prior to this one. I think that, you know, we're still stuck in teaching in schools evolution. Which I think is, I won't use the word, but ridiculous.
Okay.
I think that there's so much that hasn't been learned on our own planet. I mean, until we go through every nook and cranny of our own planet and make it public, don't let these guys, oversee themselves, but so they can't just whisk away this evidence and these findings to their own benefit, you know, I don't think we have any business going out in outer space except for near space, you know, so we can keep an eye on the sun and, you know, our magnetosphere and satellites and things like that. We're supposedly have that space station up there because they can do things with chemicals that they can't do on Earth, but I haven't heard of any breakthroughs there. So I think we're wasting a lot of money. I think we're putting a horse before the cart. And I think a lot of this money could be spent feeding the poor and getting our own planet.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. What's going to happen if you take that $16 billion, which is absolutely not even a burp in our budget, but if you take that $16 billion away from NASA, it's going to a banker somewhere.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about really taking away NASA's budget. I'm talking about, like, I think we can do exploration with robots and stuff conservatively at half the cost, you know, that to try and even come close to a manned mission somewhere. I mean, I think we got to rethink this stuff and make the powers that be, you know, more accountable to us, and what they know should be put out there as fact or not fact. We're just kidding ourselves.
Well, let me ask you this. It's a well-known fact that we've got a huge energy problem on this planet. Now, the energy problem is this. Those who have it tend to artificially jack up the price for those who need it. And we in this country are exporting $700 billion a year to other countries to buy their oil. There are people who say that the oil is going to run out. I don't know if it is. They say it'll run out soon. I don't know if that's true, but let's assume it is. Also, by burning this oil, we're dumping lots of poisons into our air. Now, whether we believe in global warming or don't believe in global warming is not an issue in this, what I'm saying here. Even if global warming's not true, we're dumping tons of poison into our air that we are then breathing, and we wonder why there's all these new diseases and cancers and things happening to us, and, you know, and we're basically doing it to ourselves. So let's say that someone comes up with, and I'm persuaded that this has been done, but let's say that someone comes up with a way to do cold fusion to produce electricity that's economically feasible if we could get our hands on helium-3. Now, that we already have cold fusion. It uses deuterium, and that becomes excessively radioactive after you use it. But helium-3 doesn't. Now, the moon is just packed with helium-3. They know that. It's there, just basically laying out all over the surface. Wouldn't it make sense that would be a really good reason to go over to the moon, set up a colony, and start mining helium-3 for cold fusion reactors to produce the power the nation needs?
Yes, it would. They would have to prove to me, which would be hard to do, I believe that we have technology that can probably pretty much the power needs of the world that we have today that is not being allowed to be used.
So you think we've already got that?
Maybe not that exactly, you know, with the helium-3, but I believe we have technology that can is non-polluting and self-supporting.
Well, we might, and I think if we do, it would be a wonderful thing if they would release the information and get it out to the public who desperately need it.
We would have to take on the oil cartel which would be like taking on the mafia. It would be a battle.
Well, yeah, except I will tell you one, you know, in every, have you ever heard the old saying that in every dark cloud there's a silver lining? Well, sure. one silver lining in the dark clouds that are hovering over us right now with this economy, people are not buying cars. That's bad for the car industry. They're not driving as much because they don't have the money. And it continues to spiral downward. Well, the silver lining, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but the silver lining is that means that the demand for the oil and the oil companies is spiraling downward, and that means their prices are spiraling downward, and they are in free fall.
Yeah, and, you know, and unfortunately, like you say, because of the economy, that's unfortunate, but in the long run, you know, it could be a good thing.
If we respond responsibly, and if we respond having done some really rational thinking and come up with some technologies that don't require that oil, then, yeah, it will be a good thing.
Yeah.
But, see, I think NASA is doing that. It was technology developed for NASA that even made it so that you and I even know about solar energy.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when we talk about they need to develop solar energy, they did. You know, they did. That's why we even can talk about solar energy and solar panels. It was developed for space flight. And
yeah,
that's how they power all that stuff up in space. And so the technologies that...
Though it's on Earth here, it's run into a dead end or a trickle at best.
Well, they've been here within the past few months have been some big leaps forward in solar energy. And one of them is because some scientists discovered that butterflies have a very thin coating of solar reactive material on their wings. And so they've duplicated that and increased the efficiency of solar cells something like 80%.
Wow, no, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, and well, that's in the news today. Okay, so it's, I mean, things are leaping forward dramatically in alternative energy. But it's because NASA is flying in space that we can even talk about the existence of solar energy.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're kind of wondering, well, what are they going to do with this space station when it's time to come down. Looks like maybe America, like that failed a space satellite, might have a target practice.
Yeah, but then you're going to have some huge chunks falling on us. Hey, man, thanks for the call. We got to run to break.
Yep, have a good day.
All right. Okay, folks, we'll be back right after this. More Kevin Smith Show Think Tank. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone line is open, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Kevin calling from Northern Alberta tonight.
How's the weather in Northern Alberta tonight?
Actually, it's almost spring-like, which is unusual.
Yeah. So, would you believe that I have the air conditioning running here?
That's probably pretty unusual for this time of year, isn't it?
No, this time of the year, we've pretty much gotten over the cold weather. And, you know, cold here is still shirt sleeve weather. And this time of the year, we've pretty much gotten past that. And we'll take another little dip into it once or twice, and then we're headed for North Hell.
For hell, you think?
I'm sorry?
You call it hell there in the summertime.
Yep. If you live in Phoenix in the summertime, you're not in hell, but you're in the northern suburbs.
Oh, well. I'm going to have to do some traveling one of these days. But the reason I'm calling tonight is I think we're going to need a whole paradigm shift before we start seeing big changes that we're hoping for and that we're wishing for. You know, we can hope and wish all we want, but until something drastically changes, I don't think we're going to get too many answers. What do you think about that?
Well, on the one hand, I would say that I agree with that absolutely. On the other hand, I would say I think we're watching it happen. I think the paradigm shift is underway, and we're watching the old paradigm in its death throes.
Well, I certainly hope you're right, because we're sort of stuck in a rut here, and we need some type of enchantment to get our minds hungry again.
Well, I think there is, if unspoken, still there is a widespread recognition around the world that going back to business as usual is not an option. It's not even possible.
Right, yeah, and I hope so. I hope so, because we're in a big pile of trouble right now, and we need to get out of this. And we're, like you mentioned earlier, we're feeding billions to the banking people and to Wall Street, and my God, these are some of the people that got us in trouble in the first place.
These are the people, them and the politicians. These are the people that put us in it, and now they're going to borrow money in our name to get themselves out of it.
Yes, and billions and billions of dollars. That's gonna influence our next generations, our kids, and you know, when does it end?
Well, it will, because it's just like you. If you go out and borrow money to pay money you already owe, now you owe more. And then if you borrow money to pay that off, now you owe even more. And it keeps growing, and you reach a point where you can't do that anymore, and it all collapses like a house of cards, and there's no escape. So, you know, we may be there. If we're not, we're very, very close. And what that does in terms of energy, in terms of survivability, et cetera, it hits all of us. You know, we're the ones that have to deal with their mistakes.
Sure, sure. It tightens the screws right down on top of us indeed, yeah.
And this is one of the reasons that I am strongly in support of, I hear people defend NASA, and they say, oh, no, you know, we need to let them keep flying in space. And so I hear that, and I read that, and I go beyond that and say, double their budget and get these guys really busy out there developing that super high technology that they've got to have to go put a base on the moon and on Mars, because that is going to bring to us a whole bunch of technology that we desperately need.
Right, but at the same time, be upfront and honest completely about what's going on. Let the people know the truth, and set some goals that you're going to shoot for.
Oh, absolutely. I think we ought to at least, at the very minimum, we should double NASA's budget. But I agree with what you're saying. We ought to make it very, very tight. And we ought to make it clear to them that you've got to be upfront, you've got to be honest, you've got to tell us what's going on. Tell the public what you're finding. And stop all this secret crap.
Yes, yes, it's time to get rid of the old boys club. I agree, Kev.
Yeah, and we have a unique opportunity right now. You know, really, really tough times in anybody's life, while they're not happy times, they're not pleasant, they are absolutely pregnant with opportunities. And we are watching right now one of those times all across the world. It is pregnant with opportunity. And now is the time, in my opinion, now's the time for Congress to step to the plate and say, let's double the budget on NASA, for NASA. Let's tell NASA that they've got to be up front. They've got to be open and honest with the public about everything they find. And let's go get this. I think NASA has the possibility, perhaps the best possibility of any agency, of really delivering the goods on the high-tech energy stuff that we need. But it's because they have to develop it in order to do space exploration and planetary exploration.
Absolutely, yeah. That's where some of our best ideas are going to come from, without a doubt. And, you know, to heck with big corporations, big oil companies. It's time to break free and really, like we said, get the new paradigm rolling and get some good ideas out there.
Well, I think it's underway. I could be dead wrong about that, but I think that we are seeing the old paradigm in its death throes, and we're seeing the birth of a new paradigm. I think we're watching it happen.
Good. Well, let's sit back and enjoy the show then.
We have to. All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Okay, what do you think about it? The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and we have a flash message from Tim in the Netherlands. It says, I don't think we as a species are fully ready to explore space. I think it would be more ideal to fully explore the minuscule world, such as understanding DNA, nanoscaled technology, and our planet completely before we go out into the cosmos. However, studying the planets and moons in our solar systems is obviously beneficial to our understanding of our planet and how we came to be here. So I think grounding NASA now that we have space programs up and running would only narrow our perspective on things, and I agree with that. All right, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, interesting show, as always, tonight.
Well, thank you.
I was looking at the definition of aeronautics in, like, National Aeronautics Space Association. It says sailor of the air in Greek, and if you put space next to it, you're talking about a sailor in space. So I had to sway towards the side of, I think that they should work on technology as far as, you know, get it working on Earth and different things like that, as long as it all pertains to stellar-type properties outside of our planet. Otherwise, you just have another completely different organization. And if that's what they want, then they need to have the Department of Energy create their own program and fund it, or some other organization. There's plenty out there. Name it something and do that. But that's a space program. And it happened to have delivered us to a lot of great technology, and they're using that to fall back on. And it, I think it's really sad that when a whole generation sat around the TVs looking at the moon, you know, in hope that one day we'd take off and thinking about the future, that we're down to a bunch of people running around worried about their pocketbooks, letting the bankers take our space administration away.
I agree with you 100%. Now, let me ask you something. Have you ever heard of LASIK surgery that people get done on their eyes?
Yeah.
You know, that would not be possible without NASA, because lasers were developed for NASA.
Yeah, so things would pop up that could help us, but I honestly don't think, I don't think that we work as humans very good collectively, because, see, when you were talking about different forms of life, I started thinking, what would be the most efficient form of life that could end up developing intellectually like us? And there were two things that I came, or actually three things that I kind of came up with. Well, one of them would be if they're more collective, like ants. If you look at a bunch of ants, you don't usually see them fight amongst each other. But if you look at humans, we don't really move like ants unless we're motivated, and then we have things going on and emotions and so many different things. So, you know, some of the ones that might have survived longer might have been able to work a little better together. Now, I know that we're capable of amazing things, but when it comes down to it, we're just so chaotic. So I think that larger forms of intelligence that have been around a long time ago might work better collectively. And the other thing with that was passed on learning memories, like being cloned. Mm-hmm. We know that there's plants taking over the Mediterranean Ocean, and those plants have properties of cloning each other, and that's what makes it so bad. You hack off a little piece of it, and it just goes everywhere. It attaches to an anchor, it starts somewhere else, and the cloning possibilities would help it go on. And to further that basis, if you had something that had those type of characteristics and was on a silicone life form based, they say that silicone doesn't break down anywhere near like oxygen. And so you can expect some of our most out there intelligent beings that can traverse the stellar skies to have silicone based makeup sometimes too, because they'd just be able to not die as quickly as humans maybe.
Boy, you have done some thinking about this.
There was one more thing. I went one step beyond that. You were talking about what we should look for in the solar system as far as for life.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading an article lately about it raining hydrogen under certain properties. I don't know if it was Jupiter or Saturn. And basically when it comes to, you know, you have different atmospheres that have different pressures, different chemical properties, all these different things. So if you're looking for life, then you would think that they'd probably want to hire a few more people that really understand the relationship between properties of what makes up the planet and how they interact. Because you might be able to form a solid matter, like even a human, at a completely different temperature base or a different substance. And I think we're very new to that field because we're so used to looking inside the Earth planet and not outside.
You are absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm amazed. You've done some deep thinking on this. I'm not amazed that you do deep thinking, but I'm just amazed that you had so many things lined up that you've thought about. That's impressive.
Well, I really enjoyed this show. It actually was a really meaningful one, really.
Well, thank you. And thank you for the call.
I appreciate it.
All right.
I'll let you go back to the show. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Bob in California, has done some deep thinking about this. What do you think about it? We are facing big trouble on this planet. And the Kevin Smith Show audience has become a think tank about a whole bunch of that stuff. All right. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And we're on final approach, but we'll still take your calls right up till the end. You know, this whole thing about we have to have a paradigm shift, I think it's underway. And that's one of the reasons people feel so uneasy. Most of us have had periods of time in our lives where we were dead broke. And most of us, at some point in our lives, you know, we weren't making enough money. We weren't comfortable. And so, you know, although we don't really want to return to that, it's not frightening. We've been there before. That's not what people are so uneasy about. I don't think so. I think what people are uneasy about and frightened about is they can sense that the ground underneath them, the old paradigm, is cracking up. They can sense that. And a new paradigm is being born. We cannot fully see what it is yet, And but the feeling of security that we get from things being as they have been, that feeling of security is cracking up under us. And, you know, so whether you want the future or not, it's here. And, you know, one of the promos that we play on our Internet TV channel for Steel Eye Media Network, it's the slogan or the words that appear on the screen say, "Where were you when the future arrived?" Well, it has arrived. It's here. We can't see, you know, fully what the shape of it is, but I think that there's no reason for us to be panicky or afraid. Whatever it is, we got to deal with it. And I think that there are some things from the old paradigm that are worth projecting into the new, because they have led the way to the new paradigm, and space exploration is one of them. I am critical of NASA on some things, and but I'm not one who thinks that we ought to do away with NASA. I'm critical of NASA doing things that, you know, people have told us, that people that have worked at NASA have told us that they airbrush out certain things in certain photographs. And then we go look at the photographs, and you can see where something has been blurred out, airbrushed out. I mean, we see that. We know they do it. Well, they need to stop that nonsense. I mean, really. That's insulting to the people that pay your bills. So I'm critical of things like that. However, I do support NASA. And I support them because not only are they the premier space agency on the planet, they are the premier, in my opinion, they are the premier high-tech development agency on the planet. I don't know of anybody else that develops as much super high-tech stuff as NASA has developed. And they have been one of the leaders in pushing us forward towards what is, I think, now a new paradigm that is beginning to develop. I think it's the new paradigm is being born right before our eyes, and the old one is in its death throes. It's uncomfortable for us, but there's no reason for us to panic. What good does the panic do? I mean, the panic doesn't solve anything. Once you have your little panic attack, it's all still going on around you. You didn't solve anything. So, you know, I think we need to keep our feet under us, keep looking ahead, and not allow the uncertainties that we're experiencing and that we're feeling to stop us from pressing forward fast and hard for new high-tech development, because that is what we need. And I don't know of any other agency as active and as successful with that as NASA has been. I don't understand why we have congressmen who quibble about $16 billion going to NASA. What utter slop. That's just nonsense. NASA, of course, can't speak out and say what's really on their minds, because they'll be in trouble with the Congress. So I'll say it. The quibbling ought to be on the other side of the fence. Why are you giving NASA only $16 billion? This is pure nonsense. You quibble over $16 billion to NASA, and you throw $700 billion. I'm sorry, NASA gets $16 billion. And then you quibble over $700 billion that got thrown at the banks and at Wall Street, and they won't account for it and won't tell you where it went. And you're quibbling about the premier high-tech agency on this planet getting $16 billion. Utter nonsense. What barrel of wisdom have you guys been drinking from? That's just utter nonsense. Well, ladies and gentlemen, NASA's not the only scientific agency involved in developing high-tech stuff. I think they are the premier agency because they operate in a very unforgiving, extreme environment called space. And so when they develop something that makes it possible for humans to live in a place where humans cannot live, they've helped us here on Earth because it's rapidly becoming an environment here where it's more and more and more difficult and questionable as to whether humans can live here. Doesn't it make sense to fund fully and richly fund the agency that develops the technology for living where humans can't live? Doesn't it make sense to do that so that that technology could be applied to us here where we are poisoning our planet and where our planet is going through some really rapid and dramatic changes? It makes sense to me. It makes sense to me, and if, in fact, nothing else makes sense to me quite like that. It makes sense to me that we should be throwing a huge bundle of that new $800 billion bailout at NASA. They need it to put a lot of really smart, high-tech brains to work. You want problems solved? There's the way to do it. You want new answers to alternative energy? There's the way. That's the place. They need to get the funding, and they need to be flying in space, manned missions, developing systems to make it possible for humans to live where humans cannot live. That's how we get to survive here. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.